How's your wife?
Doesn't experience come.
Okay, the Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for January 21st, 2010 will come to order. We have a little bit of housekeeping. We have a new page today. Michael, come up here and introduce yourself to everybody. Say your name.
Hi, I'm Mike Quadrozzi. Nice to meet you.
And believe it or not, he's from Massachusetts.
Sorry.
I don't know what happened out there. But anyway. Yeah, well, the Italian part was probably why you got hired. And then, and I think, is it Darlene's birthday today? Happy birthday. We're not going to sing, though. For those of you who are here anew today, that weren't here for the first hearing on Tuesday, what we'll be doing is, since we're not in session, we'll be presenting bonding bills to this particular committee that has the jurisdiction over these bills. And we won't be taking any votes, but we will be laying these bills over for possible consideration in a recommendation to the full bonding committee that's chaired by Senator Langseth. So give us your best shot and convince us to fund your projects, and we'll most likely make some kind of a recommendation to Senator Langseth. As you know, there's a big discrepancy between the number that the governor wants and what it sounds like the legislature might want in the bonding. So some projects are going to make it and some projects aren't, but we just don't know which ones just yet. So everything's in play right now. So Senator Dibble, Orchestra Hall. Welcome.
Thank
to the
you.
Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here to present a request on behalf of the Minnesota Orchestra, the Minnesota Orchestral Association, as well as the City of Minneapolis, for $22 million in bonding money. Mr. Chair and members, what this would be used for is a portion of a $40 million renovation to Orchestra Hall, as well as renovations to the adjacent PV Plaza, which sits right along Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis. Just a little bit, members could indulge me for 1 second, about the orchestra and why the orchestra is important, and then why this renovation to their facility, as well as the adjoining facility, is so important. The Minnesota Orchestra is one of the jewels, one of the important cultural institutions of our state. It's been in Minnesota since 1903. It has been firmly rooted in a significant part of our community all those years. Makes a huge and tremendous economic impact on our state. The musicians of the orchestra, for the most part, live and work here for their entire careers. And what folks may not know, maybe you do, but I was interested to find out that since the orchestra started its statewide touring program in the early 1900s, it's performed almost 700 concerts across the entire state in all that time. In the regional centers, many, many, many concerts. Lest folks think that the orchestra sits up high in some vaunted cloud and in a rarefied atmosphere, it's very, very accessible to many, many people. Tens of thousands of people attend their in excess of 200 concerts per year, including 80,000 students statewide access the orchestra either by going to performances or benefiting from their educational programs. This renovation of the orchestra will create about 900 jobs, as well as PV Plaza. And also, the Minnesota Orchestra provides a tremendous ambassador role and awareness of Minnesota throughout the entire country and throughout the entire world. It has gone on international tours to wide critical acclaim. It has received great notice for its recordings, extremely good reviews in the various from the various entities and critics who review these sorts of things. The orchestra, folks might not know, is the only American U.S. orchestra that's going to have a regular broadcast series on the BBC radio in England over the next 6 months. Osmovenska and the orchestra is going to represent Minnesota in a series of concerts that's going to be heard abroad. Just a little bit about this particular project. Like I said, it's part of a $40 million renovation. Good news, or not, you know, based on your perspective and how much how dollars relate to jobs. But this is scaled back from a significantly greater project that had been conceived a couple of years ago. And I should mention this is kind of the next step we had originally asked for and succeeded in receiving legislative support for a $5 million preliminary engineering grant that was line item vetoed, unfortunately, by the governor. So this is scaled back. This would have its main focus on the reception and lobby area. Folks might know that the hall itself is an engineering marvel. It's a wonder. It's widely recognized as one of having some of the finest acoustics anywhere in the world. But modern orchestras, to be competitive and to really be keeping current, it's not just about the performing space, but all the accessory space around it as well, which is used for much more than just simply receiving the guests as they arrive for the performance. Many, many other activities occur within the auditorium or within the lobby space and the reception area as well. Adjoining PV Plaza, the orchestra will take a portion of that footprint. The orchestra actually owns some of the property that's now recognized as PV Plaza, so it'll expand into the plaza somewhat. The orchestra will program the remainder of the plaza for a lot of its more accessible community offerings and festivals. It is a very important downtown gathering spot for all the workers that come from around the region to work in downtown, as well as folks who come downtown for other purposes, and it's also an icon of modernist design. Right now, if you've been there, it's pretty much falling apart. It's really, really shop-worn and really threadbare. So it's also an important element of this bonding request. With that, I think I've said enough, and I will introduce to you Michael Henson, who's the president and CEO of the Minnesota Orchestra, who can expand more on why this is such a great idea and an important project.
Welcome, Mr. Henson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Senators, and Senator Dibble. It's my great pleasure to be here to talk to you about this project. I joined the Minnesota Orchestra just over 2 years ago, coming from England, and one of the factors that drew me here was the orchestra's reputation. It is one of the top orchestras in the world. The Minnesota Orchestra was founded in 1903, and as Senator Dibble mentioned, it started touring the state only 4 years later. It has continued to do so, traveling to every corner of the state. We also began education concerts in 1911, and they continue to this day. Today, the Minnesota Orchestra performs over 200 concerts a year that are heard by over 400,000 people in person. 200,000 individuals across the state weekly hear the orchestra in our regional radio broadcasts, and millions across the country through national and international radio broadcasts also hear the quality of the orchestra and the arts in this state. On the financial front, we have announced balanced budgets over the last three consecutive years, and we are facing the current economic downturn with a degree of stability. In general, the orchestra is musically enjoying a golden period with music director Osmo Vanska, and we are excited about the many possibilities surrounding our hall renovation. Let me detail the project very briefly. I have to say that I have found this project to be extremely captivating from the first moment that I visited Orchestra Hall. I was struck then by the tremendous potential of a revitalised Orchestra Hall in this community. Since I joined the orchestra, we have tested and rescaled the scope of the whole project in light of the challenging economy. The result is a very focused and feasible project. Our vision for an expanded orchestra hall is a $40 million renovation that reinvents our public spaces, better serves our young audiences, and makes certain Orchestra Hall lives up to its full potential as a beacon within the community, accessible, very importantly, to all the community. General contractor has already been mentioned, estimates that the project will create 900 jobs. Orchestra Hall was built in 1974 for approximately $15 million. The bulk of these resources were put into the auditorium, which still functions very well. The lobby, on the other hand, was built to last for 15 to 20 years. We have three priorities in our renovation, and the top amongst these is an improved lobby. A second priority is to modernise our auditorium. And last but not least, we aspire to rejuvenate PV Plaza in the Orchestra Hall renovation. We believe that the reinvention of this entire city block will have a powerful social and economic impact on our community. I'd like to note that the $40 million figure relates only to the cost of renovating Orchestra Hall, not PV Plaza. We are currently working with the city to determine the appropriate costs for the renovation of PV. Our private fundraising efforts are going very well, but public funding is critical if we are to reach our ultimate goal. Our private donors are keen to hear that the state is a partner in our project. I thank you in advance for your support for our plans to reimagine our hall and PV Plaza for our new audiences in this century.
Thank you. Ms. Jensen, if this were to be in this year's bonding bill, when would construction be able to commence on this particular project?
Mr. Chair, we will begin work in August 2010. Our object then is to work through the rest of that year and close the hall from 11 to 12 when we actually do major reconstruction. So our designs will be design ready by the end of this summer, and we are aiming to actually progress with the project from August onwards.
Okay.
Before I forget, I just wanted to mention, Mr. Chair, thank you, that in your packet, of course, there's a lot of good general information that expands upon the presentation, but I wanted to draw attention, members' attention, to a couple of sheets that are specific reports about their own Senate districts and how the orchestra has touched the individuals within each Senate district.
The orchestra was up in my district, and they're very, very good. I attended the concert, and it's very good. I think they rival the Boston Pops, or maybe they're better. I don't know. You can tell me that. But, yeah, I like the personal touch thing here with our names
on
it.
We do everything better than in Massachusetts these days, Mr. Chair.
Well, that's yet to be seen, so let's not. But yeah. I said I like the personal touch on the folders, though, Senator Dibble. That was very good. So, Senator Metzen, any questions?
Nope. Oh, looks good. You? Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Then, anybody else have any final comments from either one of you? No.
What the President of the Senate said.
All right. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Senator. Appreciate it. We'll lay this over
Mr.
for possible
Chairman.
Recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you, Mr. Jensen.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair.
Senator Stump.
Thank you. Leroy Brown.
Welcome, Senator Stump.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the invitation to be here and present a project. I just want to give a little bit of a opening remarks, and then I'll turn it over to the good mayor of Lancaster, Minnesota. As the last presentation was going on, I was thinking about how many of us who represent rural districts, the amenities that we don't have, we really appreciate in the metropolitan area. I mean, every spring we have a flood of sixth graders from different schools in greater Minnesota coming to the Capitol. And for I don't know how many times I've asked some of these sixth graders, and it's been the first time they've ever been to the metropolitan area. So it's coming to the greater metropolitan area for a lot of rural residents is still a pretty big deal, whether it's for a football game or whether it's for orchestras or orchestra hall or what.
Senator Stump, that's true, but the flip side is the Twin City slickers don't know exactly where the heck we are either, and they should actually come up and visit us once in a while and actually find out how far away we are.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to just reach across.
Okay, good. That was a good segue then.
I was a little bit lost. I was a little bit lost for a hardboard, so I had to reach behind my desk, and I just accidentally pulled this one out, which was 1992 legislative redistricting proposal. So here it is, 2010, and we're ready for another redistricting proposal. But we can't go any further north. If you see the state of Minnesota, this little community is tucked, I think, 7 to 9 miles south of Canada, Manitoba, and what about 20 miles from North Dakota. So it's way up in the corner. And I think it's about close to 400 miles to come down here. So I do appreciate the willingness and also the long drive. I've gone through a lot of cars on my time here. What they're doing, it's a community up there that very committed, and you represent many of those communities too. It's a close-knit community. Maybe 300-400 people, and they have a very low tax base, which is quite characteristic of a lot of our rural communities. It's in Kitson County, which also got hit quite hard in the flooding that took place in 97 and periodically over the years. Basically a farming community, but it's edged right on to the east of it is a large, large block of state-owned land. And so there, you know, a lot of people go hunting up there. They have one of the small things that's brewing up there right now is that the elk herd from Manitoba is kind of moving south, and so they, you know, because there's no big barrier on the border, the elk just come across, and so they make northwestern Minnesota their home, and they just migrate wherever they want to go.
No immigration papers, huh?
No immigration. Once in a while we check them, but so it's a fairly it's a community that doesn't have a lot of resources to draw on. And I think a lot of northern Minnesota is that way, where you have a lot of publicly owned land, and yet the communities are very committed toward their rural towns. So this community is one that is in great need of a community center. We've had numerous meetings up there using kind of the old community center, and it's pretty much in shambles. I mean, not, I wouldn't say totally shambles. I mean, we use it and everything, but it's not handicap accessible. I mean, there's a host of things that the mayor will explain. And we have a proposal that would include the community raising money. We're asking the state to help in this effort as well a little bit to get this accomplished. And it really does mean a lot to all of the surrounding area. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Gary Rice, the mayor of Lancaster.
Welcome, Mayor. Say your name for the record, too, please.
Thank you. My name is Gary Rice from the city of Lancaster. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Stump, I appreciate your willingness to hear us on this project. The purpose of this project is a community center, of course, and it's been brought about by some events that have taken place recently. For about 70 years, we used the American Legion Hall as our community center, if you will. It provided the space that we needed for meetings, for events that were taking place in the community. As Senator Stump has mentioned, we're a very aggressive community in promoting what we have, but we're very limited in the resources that we have there. Being so close to Canada, we don't draw much in that direction. And to the east, the state owns a majority of the land, and what is privately owned is in CRP or some program that has diminished the population of that portion of the county. In the 38 years since I moved up here from Arizona, the county has lost something on the neighborhood of about 25% of its population.
Whoa, wait, did you say you moved up here from Arizona?
I did, Senator. I hope that doesn't reflect on my senses.
It's normally the other direction, you know. But that's okay.
I got married.
Okay.
My wife is from the community.
Okay. Now I understand.
But the county has lost about 25% of its population. Fully half of the schools have closed in the county. We're down to under 5,000 in population right now. But the city of Lancaster has been aggressive at trying to attract business and has been successful in retaining its business district pretty good. We're not immune to the losses of the county, obviously. We have lost population in the city itself. But our community, which involves many of the townships around us, they're very supportive of our town and of our community as a whole, has maintained its business district, actually has grown some of its homegrown manufacturing through programs that we have been able to sponsor locally without tax dollars. We use fundraisers and events that the community has promoted to fund these programs and to fund our scholarship program for our schools. We annually give thousands of dollars to our graduating seniors to encourage them to come home and provide jobs for them through growing our businesses there. But it's been a very difficult thing for us. We don't have a large tax base. And we don't have any manufacturing of any real size in the county. Most of our people who work either for Polaris or for Articat or for the larger companies travel 60 miles. Son lives in Lancaster and drives 60 miles to Roseau daily and has done so for the last 15 years. That's how important it is for him to live in the community. He's willing to make that sacrifice and that move. The hall that we've been using is no longer available. It's simply deteriorated beyond being able to be kept up, and the American Legion decided to close the club facility. They still have a strong post, but the building itself is gone. It wasn't much, but it was a large area that provided a lot of space that we could use for events. And we're a large promoter of these events. That's how we generate these funds. That's why this community center project is so vital to our community. We have been in touch with our city engineers. We have a project available, as you see in the pamphlet in front of you there. We've established a budget. We know where we want to go. The community is wholly behind this. They've been conducting fundraisers. They want to make something happen because they know that without this community center, there's little chance that we can fund the programs that we currently have through our education and our business retention and a revolving loan fund for the businesses and things that we have. The funds that we generate through our promotions makes this. I think I'd like to turn it over to my John here, who is a member of our council, and he can go over some of the figures that we're looking for here. I just wanted to reiterate, though, that this project is ready to go. We will start construction this summer if we can get the funding. The USDA portion of the funding has been guaranteed. We're ready from that standpoint. We've raised some money on our own, and we have some more projects set aside for the local funding that we're going to pay up front on this. And I think we're ready to go as soon as we can nail down the financing.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Say your name for the record, please.
John Stenquist. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to come down here.
And you are city councilor?
I'm on the city council, yes.
Okay.
Financially, we're looking at an estimated cost of over $1 million, about $1,100,000. And the city's share of that will be financed by $425,000 loan from the USDA, and the balance will be made up by the city itself. We currently have around $7,000 in our growing fund, and we do have some money set aside in the city accounts to cover most of the rest of the costs. So we are requesting a $579,000 bond from the state. And like Gary said, we would be ready to start construction early in the summer, probably June or July, if this funding goes through.
How many workers are you anticipating on the construction project?
I would assume that we will hire a general contractor, but there will be probably 8 to 10 jobs created.
In the construction phase?
In the construction phase.
Okay. Are there any permanent jobs afterwards?
Well, there will be a few maintenance people, and the building is associated with the municipal bar and liquor store, so it'll help promote those facilities. And there is currently 3 full-time people working there and 7 part-time people.
Okay. Would any slot machines in the municipal liquor store help out at all?
Well, I'm not sure if it would or not. It might lead to more problems.
Mr. Chairman, yeah,
that was the wrong answer.
Yes was the question.
There
yes. Mr. Chairman, initially in the construction phase, of course, there's going to be contractors mm-hmm. and some jobs created that way. But currently, we don't have a city hall. And this building will house the city hall for the community. We have a city clerk who is working out of her office, out of her law office, and basically that's where we have our meetings and things. So this new facility is going to house our records, our city records, which we need to safeguard. We have them in storage, but it's poor storage at this time. We don't have things where it's readily accessible to the public like it should be. And this office will provide that for the city as well.
Okay. Senator Stumpf, in the handout, the request from the state is $579,000, but in the bill it's printed at $557,000. Do you want that corrected in the bill?
Yes.
Yes, that should be changed.
Okay. We'll fix that. We'll fix that as soon as we get a quorum. But you won't need to be here. We'll take care of it when we get a quorum. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Senator Stumpf, you had a wonderful proposal here. I'm just kind of the governor's been very precise on not doing like city specific. A bonding thing. I'm just kind of wondering, can you make a connection, and maybe you can't, I hope you can, where this is more than just a Lancaster thing where you can draw from other area towns and townships or something that can use this facility? I mean, I think that would add some credibility, at least in my, I'm not opposed to specific projects that are good ones like this one, but if we're not going to get anywhere, then we're done. But that's what I'm trying to connect here, if we could possibly say that this is more than Lancaster. We can have community meetings from other areas. Does that make sense?
I'm Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The facilities that we have had in the past have been used extensively every year by the townships, the surrounding townships, for their meetings. Most of their town halls are antiquated. They are not handicap accessible. So even for voting, they use our facilities extensively for that. We also have meetings with the farm community, the broader community of the county, for cattle meetings, for these elk meetings, for a huge number of meetings that have to take place in our county. And Lancaster seems to be a focal spot for that, and we use them on an annual basis, many times a year.
I think that, Mr. Chairman, I think going forward, certainly that's part of your pitch, that it's not just Lancaster and
no.
Regionally significant. I think that gives you a better shot at getting something done.
Right.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Mayor. And I can't recall. I remember the last time we heard your presentation, you did a wonderful job at the hockey arena up north. During that time, though, I know that you said this is a community center.
Correct.
Pardon me. Would that community center be available for rent for individuals if they wanted to have Christmas parties or things like that?
It certainly is, and that would be one way of generating some revenue for maintenance and upkeep of the facility. We don't have a large non-secular facility in the community, and this provides for the occasional wedding dance or the birthday party that is large. It provides so many opportunities for people, and the community utilizes it a lot right now, or did, the old facility. This facility will also have kitchen facilities for caterings, which will allow to help with that. And since most restaurants, well, the only restaurant we have in town, closes at 7 o'clock, if you're going to have anything in the evenings, you need to have a facility that can cater and provide meals for large gatherings, meetings, events.
Okay. So you probably draw within anywhere from 20 to 60 mile radius, huh?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do, from the Canadian border down. And honestly, our community has a large representation from Manitoba. They have bought some homes in town for weekends. They're members of our golf club. They represent about a third of our membership, I believe. They extensively use our camping facilities out there. So we draw from the Canadian side, even though you wouldn't think that that's an area to draw from. We do. We represent everybody from the Roseau County line in. That's our school district. That's our fire districts. These are the people that we live and grow up with and maintain their facilities and things. So we draw 25 miles to the east, which is the border, and then to the west a great deal, and south all the way to Lake Brunson, which is another 10 miles away. So it's a huge area that we represent.
Okay. Any other comments? Senator Stump, any closing comments?
No, I just want to thank the mayor for making that long trip down, and John, and it is a very remote area, and I think sometimes it's difficult for us to kind of relay how much publicly owned land and stuff that we have in northern Minnesota. And not that that's, we want to change that, but the tax base is very minimal in many of those areas.
Okay. All right, thank you both for coming down. You'll need new tires when you get back, by the way. But anyway,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, and we'll lay this over for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund, are you here? I think I saw Senator Berglund.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to
Mr.
the committee,
Chairman,
Senator Berglund.
Members of the committee, Senate File 1472 is a bill that would provide bonding dollars We'd like to have some small amendments to the bill, and I'll just read them orally, if that would be all right.
Senator Berglund, let us know what they are.
Yes, that's what I'm going to do.
And then we will we'll keep track of them, and once we get a quorum, we'll put them in, whether you're here or not, okay?
So on line one, after appropriation, it should read $840,000. And then on line 10, it should read Hennepin County instead of City of Minneapolis.
So we're changing 625 to 340? Huh? And the City of Minneapolis to Hennepin County on right. line 10?
Right. So this would provide funding dollars to Hennepin County to create an African American History Museum. And you have in your packet a folder that looks like this, and it has pictures of the Coy Mansion, which has been purchased by Roxanne Givens, and she has begun the restoration of the mansion for a museum to reflect the history of African Americans in Minnesota. This mansion is located very close to the Art Institute in Minneapolis and also very close to the Hennepin County Historical Society. So the proximity to other places that people would be going to who are interested in this type of thing is very good. And we don't have a place in Minnesota for the collection and public display of information about the history of African Americans in our state. So this would be a statewide attraction, and in fact, an attraction for people from the upper Midwest who are interested in the history of African Americans in this region of the country. I'd like to, at this time, turn it over to Roxanne Givens to give you more details about the proposal.
Ms. Givens, welcome to the committee, and just say your name for the record before you start.
Good morning, Roxanne Givens. Good morning, Senator Tomasoni, and thank you, Senator Berglund, and other members here today of the Economic Housing and Budget Committee. It's exciting to be here.
I'm happy to hear that.
You just don't know how exciting.
Some people are bored, but
maybe it's because we're close to the first of the agenda, right? So it's anyway, I want to give you a little historical background on the Minnesota African American Museum. First of all, the facility that Senator Berglund mentioned is an incredible and ideal backdrop for historical presentation, preservation, and scholastic study. It is on the historic registry, and as you can tell by some of the photos that should be included in your packet, it is a magnificent structure, having been built in 1884. Our task here is to secure the bonds so that we can continue the restoration and renovation of the historic Coy Mansion. We have secured Knutson General Contractor. They're going to be the contractor that's working on this. And what's exciting about that is they were the contractor who built the Minnesota History Center. They were the contractor who did the Children's Museum. And they have restored zillions of old historic buildings. So we're excited to have them part of the team. Most of the information, and I mean, this is new for probably just everybody, but the significance of the information that this museum is going to provide to others, going back all the way to 1802, when the first known African American touched Minnesota soil, and that was George Bongo. He arrived in Duluth, and there the story goes, you know, year after year after year, but going all the way back to 1802. The museum will be education, it will be historic, it will be visual, and it will be interactive. Let's see what else I want to mention here. We have had the incredible good fortune to be able to work with the folks at the Minnesota Historical Society. They have been our consultants as we move through exhibit space development and that sort of thing, and so we're very excited that they are working with us. We have been up to Duluth and met with the Duluth school officials, who are very, very excited because there are a lot of opportunities and a lot of history that Duluth provides, and they want to be able to be interfaced with this museum and have a significant role. We talk about this is statewide, and just as of last week, we received a call from the Explore Minnesota, the tourist bureau for Minnesota, and they want to schedule a meeting because they believe and they are looking for cultural destinations for tourists coming to Minnesota. We have very few, we have no African-American ones, and we have very few other cultural destinations. We are on the Avenue of the Arts on 3rd Avenue, located in an incredibly diverse community, Stevens Square. Stevens Square is a community undergoing significant economic change, and we are glad to be a part of that. During this process, we hope to, I'm listening earlier that they were saying 600 jobs. Well, we're going to have 30 jobs, which is, you know, really an exciting opportunity. And we are going to provide employment opportunities to people from the community and the surrounding area. So everyone will hopefully have an opportunity to be a part of this historic, historic undertaking. Knutson, I have to say this because they have gone above and beyond. They have partnered with a small minority general contractor called Tri-Construction. So what they are going to be doing is mentoring them throughout the process so that they, too, can be a part of it and build their portfolio. And so there's just been a wealth of opportunity and support. And now we're here to get your support. So there are a couple of other individuals with us today. I would like to introduce Andrea Jenkins with the City of Minneapolis, and you'll have to be more specific about the title than I.
Welcome, Ms. Jenkins. Say your name for the record, please.
I'm Andrea Jenkins, and I am a City Council Policy Aide at the City of Minneapolis. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Senators. It really is an honor to be a part of helping to move this significant project forward. I've lived in Minneapolis for the past 30 years. Having grown up in Chicago, Illinois, one of my fondest memories of grade school was being able to go to the DeSavo Museum in Chicago, which is a African-American history museum, and it had a significant impact on me growing up, learning about the contributions that African Americans had made to the state of Illinois, to the city of Chicago. The city of Chicago was discovered and founded by an African American, Jean-Baptiste DeSavo. That's the name of the museum. And so I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that those types of facts related to the history of Minnesota will have significant import to young people growing up in our community, African Americans and other ethnic communities, as they go and interact with the exhibits at the museum and learn about these significant points in history. I think it inspires young people to aspire to those types of actions themselves. And so, I'm just very proud to be in support of this. Ms. Gibbons did not mention the significant, very significant cultural and economic contributions her own family has made to the state of Minnesota. And I believe that this this museum, this cultural center, would preserve and promote that history as well. And so that's one of the reasons why I would be very supportive of this project. And so,
and she's not shy either.
I know, self-serving. Oh no, my goodness, don't put me in there.
So I'm really surprised that has not come up. But her family has made some very significant contributions to this community, and I believe that they will continue to do so.
Thank you, Andrea. And also we have with us Daniel Bergen from TV, whatever it is. Daniel.
Thank you,
Mr. Bergen. Roxanne. Welcome.
Twin Cities Public Television. I'm Daniel Bergen, senior producer with Twin Cities Public Television. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. They know our work well. Our storytelling is very much about the work of Minnesota, the policy, and the goings-on today, but also yesterday, as we really see ourselves as the storytellers who kind of relate Minnesota's history. I'm really excited about this project. I was thinking about a documentary that I just finished called Challenging Expectations, which is about closing the achievement gap and getting more young people to college, out of high school to college. And this is what one of the many things that this museum can do is to offer that kind of experience that can, make a difference in students' lives. I'm a storyteller, and, in my work and some of my Emmy Award-winning documentaries include, actually, it's great to be back in the Capitol. I did a documentary about Cass Gilbert and his many fine structures, including this great edifice. My pride and joy, though, is work I did at Twin Cities Public Television called North Star, Minnesota's Black Pioneers. And it's basically a series of profiles of important Minnesotans who changed the state and the world throughout the 200 years that Roxanne referenced. It was great to hear from our friends from Northwest Minnesota. Fred Jones is an inventor from Halleck, Minnesota, an African-American who innovated refrigeration transportation and really changed the grocery industry, it was around World War II where refrigeration helped bring plasma into the field. An amazing American inventor proudly from Halleck, Minnesota, up in the far northwestern corner of the state. These are the kinds of stories that Roxanne wants to convey to the community through her museum. Another story in North Star is I was going to quiz you all and ask you if you knew who Billy Williams was, but I know testing is kind of a political issue. I didn't want to get into it. But you probably know Billy Williams, who 105 years ago this month started work for Governor Johnson as an aide and continued to work in the governor's office for a half century as an aide to over a dozen governors of both parties and became known as Minnesota's assistant governor and was an amazing ambassador to the state. Billy's a great story, a great inspiration. He's sadly absent from the Capitol now, and Roxanne's Museum, the Minnesota African American Museum, would be a new home for Billy, where students from throughout the state could learn about this amazing history that's so relevant to today. So we're excited at the great work that is happening. I think you see, as we're all trying to squeeze in to testify, the wide range of folks in the community from the private sector, the public sector, as well as other cultural organizations who are excited and supportive of this. So thank you.
Well, I was in the house.
And you were there, right. I was going to say.
And it needs work.
No. and this amount that we're asking for doesn't put a dent, right?
But, especially that downstairs bathroom. That needs real work.
I remember that one. I remember that well, yes. And notice the tunnel also in your booklet, which has an incredible story. Also, Troy has one. He's a business person in the city of Minneapolis, and he has just 1 minute. He wants to say something, and he was my transportation today. So,
okay,
Well, good morning. My name is Troy Parker. I just wanted to start by thanking you all for allowing us this opportunity to be here, and also thank the legislators that offered this legislation. I believe this museum would be not just a treasure to the state, but is also a missing link between our education system, the African-American community, and citizens of Minnesota. I believe all of our children of all races and nationalities will benefit from learning the history and contributions made by African-Americans to this state and our country's technological, medical, political, business, social, and other systems that we had the luxury of enjoying today. The museum will be an asset to the state of Minnesota for years and generations to come. We will afford our residents an opportunity to examine and access and, you know, even continue the work that's been started by these pioneers and heroes. But with your support, I think we can establish a place that will not just educate African Americans, but a museum where all citizens of Minnesota can go to celebrate the accomplishment and contributions of African Americans in our country.
Mr. Parker, I apologize for interrupting you, Senator Metzen was asking about the tunnel.
Like it's in pretty good repair.
You know, it's amazing how it's lasted. Remember now, this is 1884. The tunnel was originally built in 1884, and it connects to a house that is maybe 50 yards away. And the story goes is there's some haunting aspects of this tunnel and how well our existing building has been preserved over the years, also considering it was vacant for 20 years and no one has really done any vandalism or damage. So we're saying maybe there's a reason to that and it might be connected to the tunnel. But actually, it was probably just prohibition.
The truth comes out. Yeah.
She said probably, though. So we're
not. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I've got to leave to go to another committee. But I just wanted to quickly express my strong support for this proposal for a couple of reasons. I used to actually work in the Stevens Square community for the community organizations. It's not quite in my district, but it's directly across the freeway. It's right over the freeway from the convention center, so it's a stone's throw, and you know, and it's along the Arts Avenue of the Arts. It's situated just perfectly for all the reasons that the testifiers articulated. But I'm also extremely excited about the opportunity to renovate this house, which sat there. It's a jewel, and everyone probably has seen it. It sits right there, just off the Third Avenue Bridge, perched up over the I-94 trench that goes through there, just beyond the 35W Commons, and it's a beautiful, beautiful house that was about ready to fall down until Ms. Givens came along to save it, a wonderful architectural jewel, and it'll be a fantastic cultural facility, really telling the story of important contributions to our history.
Thank you. Senator Andrew.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think I like this project, too. I just have one question, and I came in a little bit late, but I'm wondering why Minneapolis gets to have this.
I think only because the mansion was there already. That's the only thing.
Mr. Chairman, in closing, I'd just like to say that I think this is a really exciting opportunity for our bonding bill to include a cultural element that will add diversity to our state. It will add an educational component that I think will be very important for the citizens of our state. And it isn't every day that we have the opportunity to be inclusive in our bonding bill, and I think this would give us that opportunity. And so I urge your strong support for this project.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I just want to thank Senator Berglund for bringing this forward. I think there's a strong story to tell here. It certainly has statewide significance. And my biggest question is, I remember a guy by the name of Archie Givens playing football for the University of Minnesota.
Wow, yeah, that was my brother.
Oh, he's a great back American and a wonderful football player. That,
thank you.
And just a comment. Not all the stories out of Duluth are very good. So
true.
That's a very sad commentary. And we all know what I'm talking about. So
right.
That was a very sad part of a history of our state and probably Duluth. Yeah. And there's been a lot of apologies since. And
absolutely. Absolutely. So but there's good stories coming out of there as well.
Well, yeah, I know. And I just felt like I had to get that out.
No, that's true.
It was a sad day. And,
yeah.
More good stories in bed.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Okay. Thank you very
much.
Thank
you
very much.
Thank you all very much.
We'll lay this over for possible. We'll fix the bill once we get a quorum. So, Senator Sieben, are you here? Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Sieben, the Community Land Trust, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for allowing us time to hear this bill today. This Senate file, or this proposal, would provide $5 million for nonprofit housing bonds to assist low to moderate income people with affordable housing. As you guys probably know, the Met Council estimates that there's a need for more than 50,000 units just within the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And with the instability of the housing market, this program is a really innovative way to provide stable and affordable housing across the entire state. The Minnesota Community Land Trust has 9 locations all across Minnesota, and this bill will provide approximately 200 homes to low to moderate income families. So here to describe the project further is Greg Finzel, the executive director of the Rondo Community Land Trust, and Teresa Vanderbent, the executive director of Two Rivers Community Land Trust. And, Mr. Chair, I'd also like to point out that Senator Lynch stepped in to offer her support. She was going to be here today, but she has to be down in another committee, and Senator Dibble just went to the same committee, but he pulled me aside to say that he is also very supportive of this proposal.
Okay, thank you. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Greg Finzel.
Welcome to the committee, Greg.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator, and committee members. Community land trusts have been around in the United States since the 1980s. There are now 9 land trusts in the state of Minnesota, from Duluth down to Rochester and then throughout the Twin Cities area here. To date, we have provided 675 permanently affordable homes for people of low, moderate income. And the key components to a land trust is that we permanently protect both the public and the private investments that are made in the dollars that are spent. We leverage private dollars both in our rehab and purchasing foreclosed homes, and target properties in a lot of neighborhoods that other developers, private developers, often aren't willing to go into and to rehabilitate and stabilize those communities. We sell homes to low moderate income. We define that as 80% or less of the median income. We usually serve people between 50 and 80% of what HUD defines as income limits. These are often people that are unable to purchase a home. What we often say is, but for the land trust, they would not be able to purchase a home. That often is because they do not have the funds for down payment or closing cost assistance, and we can help with those. We only do 30-year fixed-rate mortgages. I think little did we know when we started, some of us started 12 and 14 years ago, that we ever thought that there would be anything other than a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. We've never allowed some of the 80-20s or the liar loans or other things. And while we've had some people in foreclosure throughout the state, our foreclosure rate is much lower than it is in the open market. More importantly, because we own the land, we're actually a party to any foreclosure, which means that we get notified at the same time that the homeowner is notified that they're going into foreclosure. In our case, in Rondo, in which we serve the St. Paul, Ramsey County area, while we have had some people and still have 2 people in foreclosure, no one has lost their home. We have provided short-term loans. We have helped them through the crisis of job loss and medical issues. So I think it's really important in this time that you need to be there for people. You don't do it for them, but you do it with them and try to prevent foreclosures, which really leads to the fact that we really are a stabilizing fact for communities. The $5 million in nonprofit housing bonds will allow us part of the funding that we need to keep doing our work. We are probably the only home ownership program that can actually access these bonds because we own the land for 99 years, and so it meets the definition of the bonding bill. So while it's a small piece, purchasing the land, it's a very important piece of our work, and this will go a long ways for us to do. We anticipate up to two, maybe a little over 200 more homes. Thank you.
Okay. You want to go next?
Yep.
Okay, say your name, Teresa, for the record.
Yep, my name is Teresa Vanderbent. I'm the executive director of Two Rivers Community Land Trust. Thank you, Mr. Chair and senators of the committee. Two Rivers Community Land Trust geographic area includes Washington County in Minnesota and Anoka County, just north of Gregg. Just to reiterate, the community land trusts throughout Minnesota include areas in Duluth, Rochester, Chaska, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the St. Cloud, Greater St. Cloud area, and the western side of the Twin Cities, Minnetonka, that side. So we really work on covering as much of the cities as possible. I'd like to reiterate a couple of things that Greg Finzel stated. One, our foreclosure rate. In the state of Minnesota, foreclosure rate is 1 in 32. And for community land trusts in Minnesota, we're actually 1 in 75. This grant or this bond provides an opportunity for grant funds that we will then use to leverage state, federal, and foundation dollars. It will be a part of larger projects that we do, so it will not be the entire funding that we need to do projects. One of the things I really like about our model is that we work in partnership with communities to determine where our housing is, kind of what it looks like if it needs that. And for an example, Two Rivers currently works with the cities of Cottage Grove, with Oakdale, and Andover. We buy houses that are in need of substantial repair. We acquire them, we rehab them, and then we sell them to buyers. One of the things that we have learned in our research on our buyers is that 77% of my homeowners lived in Washington County prior to purchasing their house. And when they purchase their house, one of the things we hear them saying is they want a house near their job. And so we are finding that 66% of our homeowners are buying houses that are 10 miles or less from their workforce. And I think why that matters to the context of today's discussion and the discussion going forward with the legislature is part of what we're going to hear people talking about is economic development and workforce stability as a part of kind of the meter for measuring fiscal health for the state. And I think access, long-term access to affordable home ownership really gets to that issue. People want to live where they're currently renting, potentially they want to live near where they work. And if we want a good, stable workforce to provide them access to ownership models that they can afford, provide stability to their family, and I also think to our communities. In addition, we just wanted to point out a couple of pieces. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency had a request into the governor for $30 million for bonding. Of that, it has been has come back for $5 million currently, and in that bill also are some nonprofit housing bonds that may include community land trusts. And also I wanted to point out that Senate File 1382, which Senator Tomasina has authored, also includes larger funds for land acquisition and affordable housing.
There's no Senator Tomasina.
Sony, sorry. I'm horrible with names. I apologize.
People always
as you
get,
can say, but see by my
always,
red face.
They always get the Tama right, but it's the last four letters that screw up. I don't know why.
Well, it's lucky that, you know, that you can give us a bad time about it. And so I guess I would just like
you
to thank
really
you.
You know what's really bad? I got in order to get people to remember it, I got to tell them it rhymes with the Japanese TV company, Sony. You know.
Well, I have as Vanderbent, I always run into, are you a Vanderbilt? And I just say, yeah, I wish I was. So I understand that. Yeah, exactly. So I would just like to end with thanking you very much for the opportunity to have us come and provide testimony today.
Mr. Chair, in closing, I'd just like to add that It's estimated that this bill would provide approximately 150 to 200 jobs, and this money could be put to work right away. So I think that that also helps make a strong case. It certainly has a statewide impact, which is what our bonding chair is looking for, because these affordable housing units will be made available across the state. So
I thought it was pretty interesting what both of you said about 1 in 72 in foreclosure as opposed to 1 in 35, or maybe worse in the least. What's the reason? Do we know what the reason?
I would say, and Greg can add if he sees it otherwise, is that we do significant post-purchase support. Unlike a lot of single-family home ownership models, you help people do the process to buy a house. You help them take their education courses, get their mortgage product, do those things. But we're also, because we have a relationship and own the land and the homeowner owns the house, we stay in relationship with that family long-term. So we are in regular conversation with homeowners about all kinds of things. And so when financial things happen that they don't anticipate, they come to us first. And so that provides, I think, support that other single-family home ownership models don't have.
I would also just add that, and Teresa can correct me on this or fill in the blank, but because the Community Land Trust owns that property, it makes those properties that much cheaper for the for the homeowner. So that's why they're able to afford them. And, you know, they're nice homes in areas where in communities all across the state. So the purchase price for the homeowner is that much cheaper too. So it's more affordable in the long run.
Okay.
I'll just add that we actually did have one homeowner who went and got a non-conforming mortgage out into the market. And when we realized, and they realized it was non-conforming because it didn't fit with the formula, because of the way we're legally structured, we actually had we could cancel that new mortgage because it didn't conform with our guidelines. When the lender realized that, we actually had a short sale. In other words, we brought it back down to the correct amount that it should be. So we actually not only preserved all the funding we had, the state funding and the city funding and everything involved, but we didn't lose that house either. So in other words, we went from second place because we own the land. We went to first place, and we actually superseded that second mortgage. So there's been a lot of things we've learned in the last 2 years here or 3 years with a changing market. And so not only have we been able to preserve housing, like Teresa said, because we never leave the deal and people realize they can call us and we can assist them in either staying in the house, or in one case we have, they're going to need to leave the house, but we can help with the transition.
Okay. Any questions or comments from bankers on the committee or no? Okay. Any closing comments, Senator Stephen?
I think that will do it. Thank you for your time today.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the presentation, and we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in the recommendation to the bonding committee. Oh, wait. We got one more. I forgot. Ms. Lee wanted to say something, too. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record, please.
Yes. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, R and R Family Centers, and also member of the Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium. I wanted to make a few comments regarding the bill from various perspectives, where they talk about grants given to neighborhood land trusts. I would like to make the committee aware that there are other nonprofit organizations that do the same thing that the community land trusts do, but are not called community land trusts. And so if you open it up to these others, I think that would level the playing field versus giving any unfair advantage to one group versus another. I've also been a grant reviewer for various funders. And it does make a difference whether you're telling a reviewer that you have a grant versus you've got a loan, as far as whether that agency gets funded or not. And I've done this both from a sitting as far as reviewing government grants and reviewing grants given to foundations and other applications. The other thing I wanted to mention is that as far as what the community land trusts do, they basically own the land underneath the building. This has been a practice used in Hawaii. Anyone can do it. My family and relatives have land in Hawaii. We do it. You could buy the building with or without the land. You can go on 99-year leases, do whatever. I think if you really want to make things affordable, that might be a direction that the legislators might consider as far as making it an opportunity for everyone to participate in. And the last issue I'd like to mention is a number of years ago, agency was developed. Under the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, the Federal Reserve, and Fannie Mae. They were targeting the what they call the emerging market, which are the minority and the low income, and trying to make housing affordable. Their goal was 40,000 homes. Now, because, for various reasons, you know, they have not been able to do that. They ended up sort of dissolving, and that wasn't the focus. But the people who participated in that, both bankers, realtors, nonprofits, these are other agencies still working on some of the goals. And I think that should also be brought to the table, incorporated in when you're talking about who's responding to the needs of the community in providing affordable homes and doing some of the same things that I just heard the Community Land Trust say that they've done. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. And maybe you can work with Senator Sieben on some language, if possible.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to work with Ms. Yu. This is the first that I've heard, but I've also been told by my trusted counsel that bond counsel has said that this is how it should be, this is how the bill should be drafted to keep with keep the state's interests in mind and to keep the bill the
okay.
way we.
Okay. Well, you guys can work on that and let us know what you come up with. So, okay. Thank you very much. Am I the only other author here right now? It looks like I am. Okay. Mayor. I think I might as well just sit here, I think. Here, you be the chair. We're gonna take up the St. Louis County Arrowhead Regional Sports Facility. And what this is This is an attempt to bring into the Iron Range a regional sports facility that's similar to the Minnesota Sports Commission, and to actually create sporting opportunities across the entire Iron Range from Virginia all the way over to Hibbing. And what we'd like to do is to do things like renovate the memorial building, add a sheet of ice to fix up a very nice track in Chisholm, and to build a sports facility, an amateur sports facility in Virginia. And the regional implications of this, members, is very significant from the standpoint of people coming into the area, sports teams coming into the area, tournaments coming into the area, and basically economic impact across the area, as well as people getting together. I don't know if some of you that are from small towns know about the walls that are between small towns sometimes that are built up over the years. And we're pretty famous on the Iron Range for being Iron Rangers when we're not on the Iron Range, but when we're on the Iron Range, then we're from our own little small towns. And this is not only an attempt to make the region more accessible to everybody in the area, but also to open up these sports complexes and make them even better than they are right now. So how about if I introduce, who wants to go first? Mayor Wolf, you want to go first? This is Mayor Rick Wolf from Hibbing.
Thank you, Chairman Tomasoni, and thank you, Senators, for allowing me to come and testify today. I think that Senator Tomasoni, I think, covered it well when he said the Iron Range. We do appreciate, though, the fact that the folks were here from Lancaster. Usually we come from the farthest away, so it's going to be a walk in the park to get back to Hibbing today, I think, before it's all said and done. But we thank you, and I think some good points were made during Senator Tomasoni's introductory comments. I think that the folks in the Arrowhead region can be individualistic at times, and I think that the current economy and the current way things are going has made us become a lot more pragmatic about how we view things. And I think that the sharing and utilizing resources has become the norm, or the new norm, I should say. In best of times, small communities could usually have one of everything, and each community could do that. But that was yesterday. Today is today. And I think we'll need to work together in order to achieve what we need to achieve. And the Iron Range has become one, I think, large community, and that stretches all the way from Virginia all the way on over to Grand Rapids or wherever you want to go, over to Hoyt Lakes, all the way over to Grand Rapids, however you want to define the Iron Range. And I think what makes this project unique, and I think that Senator Metzen isn't here to ask the question about regional impact, but I want to make sure that that truly is emphasized, that this project does, in fact, not just benefit one community, but in fact benefits the whole region, and in a lot of cases will benefit the whole state. And when we say that, we mean that the project is going to be actually, facility-wise, it's going to be helping a facility in Hibbing. It's going to be building a facility in Mountain Iron, and it's going to be modifying a facility in Chisholm. And you put those all three together, it's going to create another venue or another amateur sports association venue that that folks not only regionally can use, but also can use from a statewide basis. We do host a number of tournaments in northern Minnesota during the course of the year, be it baseball, be it hockey, be it whatever, basketball. And I think the addition of a regional facility like this will just open up the door again for more of these types of activities for our youth, but also more of these types of activities for statewide youth to participate in these things. Now, the field house is going to be brand new in Mountain Iron, indoor track, and obviously a venue like that we don't have north of Duluth, and so that's going to be interesting. The memorial building, I think that if you have a copy of this in here, you'll see a picture of the front of the memorial building that's in Hibbing, and that truly is one of our historic buildings. And I think that it was built around somewhere between 1920 and 1930 actual year. But since then, major renovations to the extent that we want to do now to bring it up to speed to be a top-notch facility in the 21st century, these kind of things need to happen. In addition to host the new tournament, so there'll be two real phases there. One phase will be to renovate, and one phase will be to expand. And so hopefully the request that we're making today is for $12.3 million, and I think that encompasses the state's portion of the request. I think the uniqueness of this project, if you look through your packet, can be seen that we have kind of a one-time opportunity here to capture recovery bonds, federal recovery bonds from St. Louis County. And you can see that as you look at the partners are not just Mountain Iron, Chisholm, and Hibbing, but also the school districts and also the County of St. Louis. So there's actually four or five different partners in this particular project versus just the three communities that perhaps might actually have something that is modified or built in their boundaries. So that one-time opportunity to get those $4 million of federal recovery bonds ends the end of this year, 2010. And in addition, we have some private donations that are going to total approximately $1 million. So you're looking at $5 million of leveraged money before we move into getting into the raising of the money or the match money, the other match money that the cities and that we're going to come up with other funds. So I think the uniqueness, and it also brings a certain amount of urgency to this project over, I don't want to single out any other project. I think they're all great projects, but losing that kind of money coming into Minnesota, be it the northeastern Minnesota, wherever in Minnesota, I think that if we can capture that money, we should be bringing that money in, and we don't want to lose it. So I think in closing, I'd kind of like to just talk, maybe highlight the high points, and that is, number one, is that there is the regional impact. There's a partnership that's being shared not only by communities but also by school districts and by the county. We also have a one-time, unique opportunity to capture, you know, federal recovery bonds and also private donations that will provide almost one half of what our match will be from a local basis. So some of those things I think are very important to consider. But I think most importantly is what this actually will do to the youth of the region, what it'll actually do to the youth perhaps of the state as far as providing additional amateur athletic association venues and activities for them to perform. And I'm not really the technical guy. With me up at the mic today is Ron Dicklich, and he's Executive Director of Range Area Municipalities and Schools, and he's kind of to remind me of those things I forget, so you're filling in for my wife today, you know, because she does that all the time. So, but with that, I would close and open it up for any questions.
And maybe Ron, Mr. Chairman, and Ron, maybe you can tell about the formation of the association and how we kind of want to make this all fit together. And the mayor did a pretty good job of explaining all the projects.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, first of all, I want to thank the mayor for complimenting me about making me as competent as his wife. if you go back to the history of the amateur sports commissions in Minnesota, back in the 80s, we formed the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission under the very able direction of Mr. Paul Erickson, and that concept was to bring a venue to the Midwest of all the amateur sports, a lot of them tied to the different Olympic associations. And even at that time, we talked about spreading these amateur sports commissions to rural Minnesota. Not that we'd be tied with him. We've met with Mr. Erickson, but that through his auspices, they would be tying us into their marketing and promoting of our facilities. And what we're trying to do is we're going to create a regional amateur sports commission. Instead of having everything on one site, because we have a lot of nice facilities, a lot of good facilities all over the area, to be able to take winter and summer sports and fall sports all under one umbrella, but having them at different sites. And that, therefore, the creation of the project that you see before you today, which will have a new facility, will take care of all indoor sports, whether it be volleyball, basketball, indoor track, even the biggest growing amateur sport in this country, not right now, is archery. If they're going to hold a competition up there this fall, and they've got 600 participants in that, and this would be a facility that would be designed to cover that. And then we have the outdoor track facilities at Chisholm, and they have a very nice facility there, but through disrepair and problems with asbestos in the fibers that built that track, they're forced to renew that. And then, of course, as the mayor alluded to, in Hibbing, you have a building that was built under the last financial hard times. It was a WPA project built in 1932, completed in 1934, called Hibbing Memorial Arena, which has curling and hockey, and we're hoping to expand those facilities. We have to fix up our curling facilities. It was always one of the nicest curling facilities in the country, and also then to expand the hockey facility to expand our rink so that we can have more participation. And we have one other rink in town that kind of on the Minnesota Community College, and there was always a commitment there when we expanded that. We put our technical colleges together with the community colleges, and there was always an unagreed-to commitment to move that facility off that site because it's just out of place there. And this would fulfill that commitment from those years past. And I guess if you look at this, there are places in the state. Northeastern Minnesota does not have a facility like this. But back when my daughters played volleyball, I remember going to volleyball tournaments in Apple Valley and Burnsville, where they have these huge, beautiful facilities. But they actually have everything on one site. They've got their indoor-outdoor track. They've got their hockey and everything else. But at that time, there'd be 30, 40 teams coming in, and that would give our area that same ability to be able to have there's volleyball, basketball, hockey, and now that hockey's not just a sport for boys anymore, women's hockey has taken off, and Hibbing was one of the first schools. I was on the school board when we instituted it, the first women's hockey team up there in that area of the state. So there's a demand for those type of tournaments as well. So, and that's what this Amateur Sports Commission would do, working with the State Amateur Sports Commission to market and promote this type of operation.
Okay.
Question? Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Tomasoni, I noticed that this is another bill that disagrees with the state request on the handout. So I just, is this another one where we need to make a correction? Pardon?
Where are you looking?
Well, on the back page of the handout, it states the request is $12.33 million. On the bill, it says $12.355, so it's slightly different there.
I think we'll keep the number in the bill.
The highest one, yeah. We'll keep that one.
Well, it is Mr. Chair, it is to the bill drafter's credit that the numbers in the various subdivisions do add up to the total amount listed on the bill. That doesn't always happen either.
I'm glad you checked on that. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Thompson.
Then in closing, I just want to say that this is it's actually innovative to come from this area of the state to be putting all this together and to have a regional concept like this that will encompass the entire area, because it's actually about time it happens. And the venues that are being fixed up are very, very nice venues and need to have the maintenance done to them that needs to be done, and the possible attraction to bringing people into the area over and over again is something that we're looking at. And so I just want to thank the committee for hearing this this bill and listening to our issue, and thank the mayor for coming down and want to have this added to the possible recommendation to the bonding committee.
Senator Tomasoni. Well, thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, do I infer from your comment that over the years I've been here that previous proposals from northeastern Minnesota have not had unified support from
No, you didn't. Well, you didn't infer. you weren't in here when I explained that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Cohen. Before you go up to the table, we have a quorum, and we have a couple of changes to a couple of bills that we did previously that we have to make on Senator Berglund's bill, which is Senate File 1472. She would like us to amend her bill to say on line 1.8 and line 1.15 to change $625,000 to $340,000. And on line 1.10, delete the city of Minneapolis and insert Hennepin County. So Senator Cohen moves those changes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
Aye.
Motion adopted. And as Senator Kubley pointed out on my bill, there's a change in Senator Stump's bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, the amount on Senator Berglund's bill is mentioned again on 1.15. Did we do both of those?
Mm-hmm. I did mention that.
Okay. Sorry.
So, Senator Stump's bill, Senator Kubley will move that on line 1.16 and on 1.15, that $557,000 be amended to be $579,000. On Senator Kubley's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion adopted. Senator Cohen, I think your bill is up now. Senator Cohen, Senate File 979.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. This is a proposal relative to the request from the Ordway Center for the Performing Arts and the City of St. Paul for $17.5 million
for renovation and reconstruction of the Ordway Center. Mr. Chairman, I've carried legislation in the past for the Ordway. Let me make clear for members who've listened to prior presentations that those efforts were for the needed renovation of the Ordway itself. This is a much broader concept and proposal, one that has the strong support from the city. I think it's one of the top two recommendations from the mayor and the city council. Ms. Patricia Mitchell, who's the president and CEO of the Ordway, is going to provide the bulk of the presentation. Let me just make a couple of comments, though. What's happened, and I hope and expect almost everybody, if not everybody on the committee, as well as staff, have had the chance to go to the Ordway, understand what a great facility it is. When Sally Ordway originally conceived the Ordway Music Theater, her concept back 30 years ago was that it would be a center for the performing arts for what was then in existence, the Minnesota Orchestra, the home base for the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, home base for the Minnesota Opera, and the Schubert Club. And that worked out well for a number of years. What's happened in the last number of years, however, is that there's additional events that have taken place. Obviously, the Ordway has become a center for the touring Broadway shows, as an example. And so programming has become very difficult. The Ordway continues, and in fact, is even more enhanced than it was at the time of its opening, to being a facility that draws from throughout the state of Minnesota. Ms. Mitchell can give you some of the numbers, and goes beyond the state of Minnesota. You obviously have people from the upper Midwest coming to the Ordway in significant numbers. It's also a facility that has led the way in terms of performing arts centers and the organizations within the Ordway, the Chamber Orchestra, the Opera, the Schubert, in bringing a huge number of school children from throughout the state. I think now there's something like 50,000 students who come to the Ordway during the course of a single year. What's happened, however, is that where there's so much usage of the auditorium, it's become very difficult to do everything. For instance, the Chamber Orchestra, in performing a number of evenings, weekends, during the course of a September to June season, often finds itself in competition with, say, the touring shows. So there's the need to enlarge the smaller theater that some of you might have been in, the McKnight Theater, to allow it to not compete, obviously, with the main house, but to be able to do things in tandem and have the theater with the ability to mix and match shows. The additional note, I mean, or a couple of other notes, is that the Ordway is obviously, from the more parochial perspective, is the centerpiece of St. Paul. And certainly a lot of the economic development, what's happened in downtown St. Paul, and obviously we're a smaller town compared to Minneapolis, has been derived directly from the activity at the Ordway. To undertake something of this sort, though, is difficult because the discussion, again, Ms. Mitchell is going to talk in more detail about it, is to reconstruct the McKnight Theater, make it a larger facility so you can have the performing arts organizations perform at the McKnight. Now it's something like a 330-seat auditorium, so too small for most of what takes place. This also requires a significant effort on the part of the private community. There was a task force chaired by Bob Sinclair from Securian and Carlene Rhodes from the foundation, previously from the Children's Museum, which worked with a number of the business leaders in St. Paul, came to the conclusion that this was absolutely necessary for St. Paul, and as part of this proposed an endowment that would help maintain the theater as well. So this is a combined effort on the part of the private and public sector, a very significant effort. I'm not sure I've seen quite this combination of effort in St. Paul. Mr. Chairman, I kid you about former Senator Dicklich's presentation on your behalf earlier about the unified effort with what you're proposing. This is a unified effort that I think is unique in St. Paul.
You understand that, huh?
And that's why I, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly why I raised the question, because I thought we were on a similar track. So there's a couple of comments I wanted to make. Again, I want Ms. Mitchell, who's been here for 3 years, has came from the San Francisco area, so we usually don't get the migration from west to east. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, has had a lake place. Our family has had a lake place here for many, many years, so it's not that she wasn't familiar with Minnesota, but has done a spectacular job during the last several years she's been in town.
We've had an interesting day because we had a guy from Lancaster, Minnesota, who moved there from Arizona. So we got must be something in Minnesota that is attracting people.
I agree.
Ms. Mitchell, welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record.
Patricia Mitchell. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you, Senator Cohen. And a slight correction for the record, I actually came here from Los Angeles, which some people think is even odder.
Farther south.
But it's a great pleasure to be here. And it's a pleasure to speak on behalf of my colleagues, Sarah Luttman, the president of the Chamber Orchestra, Kathleen von Bergen, the executive director of the Schubert Club, and Kevin Smith, the president of the Minnesota Opera. We together have formed an organization which is called the Arts Partnership. And it is, as Senator Cohen was alluding to, quite an unusual step for organizations that could be regarded as competing to have taken. And we have joined together literally in an organization to solve the problems that have plagued the Ordway and its constituent companies really since the beginning, and to make it possible for us to continue and increase our service to the state. We're happy to be coming here to the legislature with one request rather than four, which might have been the case. And the problem that we are trying to solve and the opportunity we're trying to realize comes from a very happy reason, as Senator Cohen alluded to. We actually have all – the organizations have outgrown the amount of time that's available at the Ordway's main theater, and frankly, the demand from the public has outgrown what is possible to accommodate in the Ordway's 1,900-seat main theater. That theater this season is dark, which is the word we use to mean nothing happening, is dark 23 days, which is hardly enough to keep the building tidy. It's certainly not enough to welcome all the members of the public, all the school children, all the varying art forms that it's important for us to be able to provide to the citizens of the state. The solution to that problem is very close at hand. It's actually through a wall that exists now on the other side is the beautiful, very small, 306-seat McKnight Theater, which is a lovely facility, but because it is so small, it's not efficient to present or produce in there, and the kinds of activities for which there is the most need can't be accommodated in that few seats. As a result, the McKnight Theater is dark, which means not in use this year, 33 weeks, which does seem fairly wasteful. And so came the idea to convert that space into an 1,100-seat purpose-built music hall, a concert hall. The St. Paul Chamber Orchestra would then move its activities at the Ordway into the concert hall, freeing up time in the main theater for more opera, more theater, more importantly for the community, more dance and more world music performances, and very importantly, to allow more school children to be served at the Ordway. The Ordway Center itself, through our own education programs, this year brings 50,000 school children to the building. When this project is completed, we can increase that and bring another 30,000 school children. And again, that's just the Ordway. That doesn't speak to the students served by the other organizations. A thing that also that it's important to realize about this project and its impact is that the Ordway is a statewide resource. I believe in your packets you have this handy-dandy map, which really shows where the people who take advantage of the Ordway come from. So those little, I know the most about the blue dots because the blue dots represent the Ordway's audience. We have school children and adults coming from all over the state for programs at the Ordway. The large yellow circles represent virtually cover the state because so many of the programs that are presented at the Ordway by these arts partner organizations are broadcast on Minnesota Public Radio and serve the state for free. So between the fact that somebody can come from this farthest blue dot to the Ordway for a ticket price of $3 to see a world-class professional arts experience on a bus that the Ordway actually subsidizes, and the fact that that broadcasts are available throughout the state really shows you the statewide impact that the Ordway has had over the last 25 years and which we hope to increase through this project. Another thing that's important to realize is the public-private nature of this partnership. Our bonding request is $17.5 million, which is half the cost of the construction of the concert hall. But it is part of a much larger campaign, a $74 million campaign, the other half of which is the endowment that supports the activities in both performing spaces and the organizations that will perform there. So the state's bonding money, should it come to us, is enormously helpful in leveraging the private sector for the balance of the money that's required. We've already raised $15.7 million, so with the state bonding measure, we would be more than halfway there, which is enormously significant and enormously helpful in leveraging the rest of the resources that we need, particularly for the endowment portion. It's also useful to note that the construction project would generate, this is estimated by McGough, our general contractor, 735 construction jobs. And interestingly, something in the neighborhood of 50 full-time equivalent permanent positions, because when the hall is open, it will take, as the current theater does, ushers and house staff and people in the box office and people backstage delivering the performance, and even artists who actually, those actually are jobs. Artists do actually live someplace and buy things and pay taxes, and most of the artists who perform at the Ordway do live in the region. Many come from, the ones who come from outstate, of course, are happily staying in our hotels, eating in our restaurants, and renting our cars. So there is an employment aspect to this hall, even after it is built, that is actually quite significant. But most importantly, I think it is what this project will make possible for the citizens of Minnesota. It's a huge advancement in our ability to serve the whole state with the highest quality performing arts. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Scherer and Ms. Mitchell. You know, I noticed you mentioned the amount that has already been raised, and with the contribution from the state, that it would help to leverage other monies. That, are you implying then that construction would not begin until you have all the money in hand? Or, you know, I guess I'd like some clarification on that.
We are
hopeful that we will succeed in raising the balance of the funds, which are mainly the endowment and support funds. Not the construction funds are actually mainly raised should we get the bonding measure. But the fact that the building becomes possible, we believe, will leverage the fundraising opportunity for the endowment portion. We are working now with our architects and McGough to finalize the construction documents. We could begin off-site minor construction soon after that is completed. The major demolition can only happen in a summertime. And so the major actual demolition of the McKnight Theater itself would happen in the summer of 20, could happen as early as the summer of 2011, with some pre-construction work beginning before that time.
Thank you. Any further questions? The other witnesses, would you like to say something? No? Senator Cohen, any final remarks?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, Ms. Mitchell has stated this very well. Again, I would emphasize at the parochial the importance of this to St. Paul. The Ordway has been the center of the city. But reemphasize our discussion of the statewide and even beyond significance of the Ordway Center. From my work with arts organizations and the like over the years, I believe, and I hope I won't be contradicted, but I think the Ordway brings more school groups to its performances and to the theater than any other arts organization or performing arts center. And as Ms. Mitchell indicated, the hope with the change and the increase in auditorium space is that there would be at least another 30,000 students coming in. And again, your emphasis was this
and
is the Ordway.
That's just our program.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So this is, you could inquire of the groups here represented Opera Schubert and SPCO as to the numbers they have. But if you're looking at something like 100,000, 120,000 possibly, when you take into account the performing groups of students and student groups coming to the Ordway, that would be by far the largest number in the state.
Senator Tomasoni.
Just as long as we have it sitting at the table here, maybe you should introduce the people that are with you. So we can put it on the record. I can't see them, so right. On the record.
I'm Sarah. I'm the president of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Van Bergen, the executive director of the Schubert Club.
And I'm Kevin Smith, president of Minnesota Opera.
Opera, good. Ooh, thank you very much. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Senator Cohen, and thank you for your testimony today. We'll lay this over for possible inclusion for the letter of recommendation.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Senator Sachs, I do have a bill for Senator Scogin. Is that what you got here?
I do.
Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure. Senator Sachs,
thank you, Mr.
Do your
Chair.
Best.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. On behalf of Senator Scogin and as a co-author, I'm here today to present a bill that will appropriate about $20 million in general obligation bonds for the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program, known as the BDPI. And the BDPI grant program has had a tremendous record of success in Greater Minnesota. It's created jobs, it's retained jobs, it's grown local economies. You have some information, I believe, in your packet, and I think that does a pretty good job. Don't forget to look at the back, which shows where the grants went in Greater Minnesota. DEED has referred to this grant program as an outstanding return on investment, and with me today is J.D. Burton of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities to give some brief testimony and help answer any questions that the committee might have.
Welcome, Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni, members of the committee. My name is J.D. Burton. I am an attorney with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The Coalition, or the CGMC, is a nonpartisan advocacy organization representing 77 cities across Greater Minnesota. As Senator Saxhog had mentioned, and thank you, Senator Saxhog, for your support, as well, I wanted to recognize Senator Sparks, who had offered his assistance as well. The legislation before you would appropriate $20 million for the Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant, or the BDPI grant. This BDPI grant itself is a current statute, provides 50% of capital costs to cities and counties in Greater Minnesota to essentially help them pay for industrial parks. It helps for sewer systems, utility extensions, street improvements, wastewater treatment systems, etc. It's administered by DEED, but it's funded with general obligation bonds that goes through the capital investment bill every 2 years. This grant was initiated by the CGMC in 2003. It was designed to give Greater Minnesota cities of all sizes a chance to compete for economic development dollars. The city saw this as a way to band together to secure more funding that then they could apply for small grant amounts, $100,000, $250,000, $300,000, sometimes more, to help bring jobs to their communities, to help attract businesses, increase their tax base, and help grow their economies. And without question, this grant has been an overwhelming success for the state. It has created approximately 2,370 jobs since 2003. $32 million has been awarded by DEED since this time, but you also have an additional $31 million in requests that have come in since 2003, which did not go funded as a result of not having enough money in the grant or for other reasons. You've seen, and according to DEED, there's been about $130 million in investments that's been created as a result of this grant. So that's a 4-to-1 return that the state has put in with investments that have been created. DEED itself, as Senator Saxhog indicated, has called this, quote, an outstanding return on investment. 80 cities have utilized this grant since 2003. That includes grants for the city of Virginia, the City of Bemidji, the City of Cold Spring, City of Olivia and the City of Benson, City of Austin, and the City of Coleraine. On the back of your handout, which is entitled Support the Greater Minnesota BDPI Grant, you'll see a complete list of all of the cities that have received grants under this program. Each one of those cities has its own story on how it's used the grant to create jobs or attract businesses in their communities. The CGMC is in support of Senator Scogin's legislation because this money is needed now, and this money can be utilized by Greater Minnesota cities right away. The number that is in this bill, $20 million, reflects the demand that is out there and reflects the success of this grant program in the past. The money goes out the door right away. The governor and the legislature has talked a lot about bonding projects that have a statewide impact. There is arguably no greater program in the state that has a greater impact than the BDPI grant program. It helps cities across the map. And of course, this is a Greater Minnesota targeted grant program, but you've seen in the past the legislature has understood that the success of Greater Minnesota cities reflects them all. 2007 and 8 legislature, Senator Metzen himself was the author of this legislation for $20 million, he and Senator Michelle and Senator Sparks. So it isn't just defined necessarily the importance of it to Greater Minnesota. It can benefit the rest of the state. When our cities in Greater Minnesota are successful, so is the rest of the state. There's a second question issue that I wanted to raise about this bill and about this legislation and grant that I want to take time here today. Deed will be testifying on Tuesday in the same committee to talk about a proposal for their agency bonding requests. The CGMC has concerns with this proposal. Deed's proposal would be to merge the BDPI grant program, so the grant program that I've talked about this morning, with a biobusiness grant program. Now, that's an existing, totally separate grant under state law. It provides grants to higher institutions of higher education and cities for infrastructure projects that are associated with biobusiness investments. Deed wants to merge this two program, make it statewide, and make this new grant available to cities and counties and education institutions and others across the state, so it would be opened up to everybody. The CGMC is opposed to Deed's proposal. We are concerned that this proposal not only is unnecessary, but would weaken the impact of Greater Minnesota's economic recovery by essentially directing resources from a grant program that has proven to work to other areas that may not have as much of a demonstrated success. And I think that this is particularly concerning for us if you think about the economic struggles that have faced Greater Minnesota since the recession hit. I want to make no mistake, the recession has hit everybody, the Twin Cities, all the metro area, and Greater Minnesota. But if you look on this handout that I provided, which says opposed Deed's proposal, you'll see that the economic disparities have really hit Greater Minnesota much harder than the metro area. There are less employers likely to hire. There are population declines. There are higher unemployment rates than the metro area. And there are significant differences in wage payments, annual wage summaries for Greater Minnesota. If you take these statistics and couple them with the fact that the majority of our cities are suffering significantly from the unallotment of local government aid, which goes to 65%, goes to Greater Minnesota, the strainments on Greater Minnesota cities is significant. At a time when the legislature is looking at new and innovative ways to grow jobs in our state, to create the tax base, and to enhance our economic development, we would caution you not to forget those grant programs that have a demonstrated track record of success. The BDPI grant program is extremely successful as a standalone grant program under state law. It does not make sense to merge this and tinker with a program that works. We would urge you to keep in mind that this grant program has a high degree of success. So again, to summarize, we are respectfully requesting this on behalf of the CGMC that you support Senator Scogin's legislation of $20 million for the BDPI grant program as a standalone legislation, and we would urge you to oppose Deed's proposal to merge these two programs together. I would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Mr. Burton, I think maybe one thing you might want to add to your proposal and your contention that the Deed's proposal is not a good one is that I don't think there's any businesses in rural Minnesota. And this $25 million could be eaten up by one proposal pretty easily on some of these biobusiness projects because they're very expensive, and they're very high buckets from what I can tell. And I think what they really want is they want to be near a metropolitan area, at least my understanding. And so the effect on rural Minnesota by merging these two would probably be that there won't be any money for rural Minnesota.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's a correct point. I want to be careful to note that there are a few cities in the past that are CGMC members, like Rochester and Moorhead, that have qualified for this money in the past, but the vast majority of cities would not be looking to expand in biobusiness capacities. That's not the design. We support the biobusiness program. It has worked. We have a policy position in support of it. But the point is, they should be separate. They should have their own pots of money so those who are targeted towards those types of programs can apply for those. Merging them just opens it up for raids one way or the other, and I just don't think that that's good economic sense for the state.
Okay. Any comments, questions from the members of the committee? Senator Saxog, any closing comments for Senator Scogin?
No. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just would ask for your support for this grant, and we'll know that you'll give it good consideration.
Okay. All right. Then we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in the letter of recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you very much. Senator Olson. Welcome, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here today on behalf of a project for expanding the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Tribal College. And with me today is Sharon Kotla from the Tribal College. And she, hopefully you have a handout that she, does everyone have that handout? Okay, great. Thank you. And basically, the Leech Lake Tribe, Tribal College has become an integral part of the community, offering opportunities to Leech Lake members that incorporate cultural relevancy and have been beginning to help in turning around the graduation rate for high school students and the connection that there's something in the community available in the way of higher learning. This has been so far a very successful college for Leech Lake, but there are opportunities that the tribe has actually big plans for the college in the way of expansion. And what the Tribal College is asking for is the support of the state in moving forward with some of their expansion plans. And to give you more detail, I'll turn it over to Ms. Kotla.
Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record, please.
Sharon Kotla.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much for my time here with you. I would like to say just a few words in Ojibwe. And I also like to let you know that I don't speak Ojibwe very much. I have my mother here. She's one of the only 60 band members left in our band that speaks Ojibwe still fluently. Bujou, bujou, shibaka mugukwe indigo. I'm from Leech Lake, and my native name is Sheba.
Well, wait, no. So was this like my Italian family where they only spoke Ojibwe when they didn't want you to understand it?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I'm married to a Caucasian, and when we first came up here, my mom and dad, they speak Ojibwe to each other all the time. And at night, we'd hear them talking and laughing, and my husband would say, "They're talking about me, aren't they?"
Maybe we should get mom up to the table here.
Give us a listen. Her name is Frida Fairbanks.
Because I want to know if she was like my parents. See, I didn't understand anything my grandfather said to me until I was about 15.
It was raised in a family like that.
My and Senator Tomasoni, I grew up in a little town called Sundberg until I was five, and it was the same thing there except it was Norwegian.
See?
And people spoke Norwegian on the streets downtown whenever the kids were around. So I can totally relate to what you're saying.
I knew about five words
saying.
In Italian. I knew sugo, pasta, mangia, basta, and vaca gara, but I didn't know what vaca gara meant. I just knew my mother was mad at me when she said it. And I can't tell you what it means here.
She was carrying the club then, or just said look in the eye.
She was willing to,
to say a few words in Ojibwe about the importance of the tribal college to the Leech Lake community?
Oh, yeah, I suppose I could say.
Okay, we'd really like to hear from you.
Say your name first before the record, too.
Frida Fairbanks, Indigenikas. Shall I interpret what I just said?
Yes.
Frida Fairbanks is my name, and Sharon Fairbanks Kotla is my daughter. She's a twin, another girl. And Ingi Kagwichimi Guma Jibui Jibit Jibui Jibi Jabawi Jiog Mi Bioshkibi Bindigean Maochiwaka. My daughter invited me to come with her to come and see this place here, but I didn't think I was going to speak. I was just wanted to watch. We can all be on. We pissing the money. Ekidoatomo. I inga no ki in Danis. Chikino ma di uga mi go. The bishku go. Chi nagiso go ema. And the shi am no kit. My daughter invited me to come here and listen, and she came from a college where she's been going to school for a long time, and now she's working for a college here in Cass Lake, and she's considered a pretty high member in that college. So they sent her over here to come and speak about the college. So I'm here sitting. Well, I added more English than I did my own language.
Thank you very much, Frida. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here. Now, did you understand all that?
I did, yes, I did.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
And Senator Tomasoni, before Sharon starts, I would just like to say how much it has meant to the tribes in up in the northern part of the state, what the legislature did last year in passing $2 million for language revitalization projects. And for the first time that I'm aware, the state taking the initiative to reach out to the tribes and say, "This, your language and your culture is important to us. We recognize its importance to you. We value that importance, but it's also important to the state as a whole. It's an important part of our unique heritage, and we want to support that." I think that has really meant a lot and has really done a lot to enhance relations between the state and the tribes. And I think this is an opportunity as well to build on that type of support and to send the message to students in northern Minnesota that the tribal college that's available for them and that puts a special emphasis and focus on Native American culture is something that we value as a state.
Okay. Sharon, you like to add to that?
Yes. We have approximately from 175 to 250 students registered each semester. The spring semester, we have 214 students registered now. We graduated, I believe it was 38 students last year. We're a growing college. We don't have enough space. Our largest classroom houses about 40 students. Should we ever need to have a class that's bigger, that holds more students than that, our core classes traditionally will hold more students, and we're I want you also to know that this is not only a tribal college. We 10% of our student population are non-native students. And so we are attracting more students from the region than just the Leech Lake Reservation. We're growing. We're splitting at the seams. We have no storage space. We have we had over in 2009 to our library, our small library, we had over 20,000 visits to the library itself. I did not include that in your packet, but our library right now is only 1,050 square feet. It only houses eight computers. We have over 6,500 items in the collection. We have one room, 10 by 12 room right now, that's full of library materials that needs to be cataloged and put onto the shelves, but there's no room. We only have 555 linear feet for our general collections right now in our library. Our structure was designed in the shape of a Thunderbird. And this is the way the college looks now. And the only buildings we have are this wing and this wing. And part of this building, we had to downsize. This is the church building down here. We had to build that half the size of what's depicted here because of lack of funds. What we're asking for in this request is $7 million to build this connecting piece right here. And it's our goal to go sustainable design through our buildings. We have already contracted with a local architect out of Bemidji, EAPC, to design the space using geothermal technology, solar panels, in-floor heating, but we don't have the funds to move forward. It's where we will put our, we plan to move our library there. We plan to move our community education center there and also our learning center. We have a pretty strong learning center with a lot of our students who are peer tutors are being asked to go across the country to teach other tribal colleges how to be peer tutors. It's really, if you come to visit us, you'll see that we are quite we're quite involved in our students, and our students are quite involved in their education. I don't have anything else to add to that, but if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Are the students all learning the language?
The students are all required to take, yes, as part of the liberal arts a class in Ojibwe, and we do have one of our students is teaching. Who graduated is teaching Ojibwe language, the first class, the first year course. And then we have a man from Canada with a master's degree in English teaching Ojibwe.
It was my experience that if you got to practice it after you studied it, that you actually learned it. Do they get to practice it when they leave the school?
Matter of fact, I got a call from Senator Mary Olson's office last night at 6 o'clock to be here this morning, so I had to go back to my office 20 miles away to get my materials, and the language, the Ojibwe Mon language table was going on in the Benny Tones Memorial Drum Room, and so I stopped in there, and I went in, and I said, Anin, Anin, Anishinaabe Dug, Anin, Ajayin, I said, okay, my native people, how are you doing? And they were all sitting around eating, and they're not supposed to speak English when they're there. They're just supposed to speak Ojibwe. And that's a student-led meeting every week.
Excellent. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You probably, maybe you already said this, but I'm going to ask you, so how many students are there?
We had in spring semester, we had 214 enrolled. Fall semester in 2009, we had 239 enrolled. We average, we get approximately between 175 to 250. 250 has been our highest. We are an accredited college, accredited by the North Central Association of the Higher Learning Commission for 5 years. We are currently getting ready for our 10-year site visit, our 10-year accreditation site visit in October.
And Mr. Chair,
is generally everybody there, or a large percentage comes from the Leech Lake
Reservation? A large percentage comes from the Leech Lake Reservation, yes. I would say that even though Bemidji is not within the boundaries of the Leech Lake Reservation, it's just right off the edge, I would say that they come within 60 to 70 mile radius of the college, and we are a commuter college. We have no dorms.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Senator Olson, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things I would mention is that, as you know, as Sharon has said, the college has really been growing by leaps and bounds since it's a relatively new college. It's reaching out, expanding its programming options. It has partnered with Bemidji State University and is developing programs that can be feeder programs into four-year degrees there. And I think another really important aspect with regard to the library and the work the Senate did related to language revitalization, in order for children to be learning language in the classroom, there's a tremendous amount of work that the committee we created is working on right now. But there needs to be a place for a repository for materials that have been written in Ojibwe. Because Ojibwe traditionally was not a written language, there are a lot of materials being created right now in different places, but there hasn't been traditionally a central repository to have access to these materials. We need to have the curriculum developed, and BSU is in the process of working on this to teach teachers to teach in the classroom, and then the curriculum in the classroom as well. And the tribal college, having the opportunity to expand their library, can really be an important partner in this whole overall process of what needs to happen to really revitalize the language in a meaningful way.
Okay. Any questions from anybody else? Okay. Great project. Thank you very much. And we appreciate you coming all the way down here in short notice. And Mom, thanks for being here. We'll lay this over for possible inclusion in a letter of recommendation to the bonding committee. Okay, thank you. Okay, Senator Olson, you have then Senate File 1853 on the list also.
Yes, I do, and I think I have several people coming to the table. You can probably tell by the red and black that they're from Bemidji.
I thought I recognized those sweaters. And
we were traveling there last year getting witnesses. And it was kind of interesting that we didn't see these people. Mm-hmm. Or this issue didn't come up.
Chair of the tribal building. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Did you call them at 6:30 in the morning too? Or?
I think they
almost.
Actually, I think it was probably within the last 24 hours anyway, right, Laddie?
Yes.
Yes.
And we very much appreciate being on your schedule today, Mr. Chair. The Bemidji Headwaters Science Center project is a project that has been in the works in the Bemidji community for many years. A board has been working on this project, and the city has prioritized this as something they would like to do and has set the land aside for this project on Lake mm-hmm. Irvin, which is connected by the Mississippi to Lake Bemidji and is part of the overall South Shore development. That is right now where the regional event center that we funded a couple of years ago is underway in the process of being built. But beyond the jobs that this project represents and the economic development, this project has a number of other areas of significance that are really important and have had growing importance to the legislature since this project was first envisioned. I'd like to call your attention, members, to the map that
this
you've been given.
Is the old J.C. Penney store?
Was it the Penny store or was it the Woolworths?
We are in Penny. The old Penny was, store.
You are correct, Mr. Okay. Chair. The right. old the present location is in the downtown Bemidji old Penny store.
We were there. The upstairs was kind of creaky, in fact.
Well, there were several stores downtown, Woolworths, S&L, Penny's. I remember as a kid they all had that upstairs loft. But the map I wanted to show you, Mr. Chair, is this map the service area for the existing Science Center in Bemidji is highlighted in green on this map. And what I think this demonstrates, and what those of us in northern Minnesota often, I guess, probably get a chuckle out of, is when we hear people, our fellow legislators in the metro area, talking about St. Cloud as, for example, something in northern Minnesota. As we know,
we did this earlier.
Who live in northern Minnesota?
Before you got here, so.
From a geographic standpoint, most the geography of what is actually northern Minnesota is served by the Science Center in Bemidji. The schools, actually everything off the outside of the Arrowhead area, Bemidji is right in the central of that northern Minnesota area, and so the Science Center has been a natural resources for schools, colleges, and pre-K through 12 programs have partnered with the Science Center to serve the math and science needs of their students. The emphasis on math and science has only grown since this project was first envisioned and the doors of the original Science Center opened. And the opportunities for partnerships have been recognized with through grants that have funded some of the projects that exist in the Science Center. But the project, or the Science Center as it exists today, is really woefully inadequate from a physical structure standpoint. There's so much more that could be happening there if only they had the physical facility to allow the dream for this center to be fully realized. And the opportunities for partnerships aren't just with the schools, as I referenced briefly, and I think we'll hear some more about, but they're also with the tribes. The tribes have really been vital partners and are interested in, and I know that there's work at the University of Minnesota in this area as well, but they're very interested in opportunities to take traditional science and medicine and integrate those into our Western science and medical knowledge. The two can be very complementary, and the opportunities for children to learn about traditional knowledge as part of a curriculum can be, this can be really a center for that partnership and that process to occur. And those conversations right now are already ongoing. Mr. Chair, recognizing the realities of the bonding dollars available today, the project that we're bringing you here today has been scaled back from the $13 million bonding request that would be what it would take to actually begin this project moving forward, or I should say to actually build the project as the state's share of that request, to a request for $475,000 to move the next step forward. That would actually finalize the designs, bring the project up to date in terms of its vision today, and make sure that the project is then shovel ready for kind of picking up the economic development in the Bemidji area once the Convention Center project has been completed.
Okay. Who would you like to go first here?
I think we're going to hear from Roger Davis, who's on the board with the Science Center.
Mr. Davis, welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Roger Davis. Been here before, many years ago. I'm a former professor from Mankato State University Urban and Regional Studies Institute. I was attracted to this project, or actually recruited to it, because I decided to retire in the Bemidji area, and someone wouldn't leave me alone. Some of you have probably been there before. I think I would like to defer really to the chairman and president first, and then I'll pick up the pieces afterwards. Laddie, if you would.
My name is Adela S. Elwell, but everybody knows me as Laddie. And I remember some of you from 10 or 12 years ago when we were here the first time and were successful in procuring about $200,000, which we used for a pre-designed study and have made excellent use of that information. But we really need to go forward. We're 16 years old now.
We selected our name, Headwaters Science Center, recognizing that three great American watersheds originate very close to Bemidji: the Laurentian watershed flowing to the Atlantic, the Red River of the North flowing to Hudson Bay, and of course our own and most popular Mississippi watershed. But that means that we cover a huge area of northern Minnesota, and we have become, I think, a very important resource in our area. Last year was a tough year for all nonprofits, and we had a tough time financially. But part of the reason that it was tough financially was because our membership increased, and membership usually pays for itself. But the visitors who come in and the school groups who come in really don't quite, and we've got to beef that up a bit. But we served over 4,000 more visitors this year, bringing our total up just under 30,000 for last year. I don't really want to take any more time. I think Roger can cover the details of what we're hoping for better than I. But I do make a plea for the families and youth of northern Minnesota, many of whom never do get down here very much. For those of us who grew up in families that visited museums and took advantage of educational opportunities, it may not seem like much, but to our kids, it really does. We collaborate a great deal with the ECI folks, Early Childhood Initiative, with all the schools, 76 different schools in our region, and we also do collaborate significantly with Bemidji State, and we work a great deal with the Leech Lake, Red Lake, and White Earth reservations. So I think I'll let Roger take it from here.
Well, 12 years is a lot of persistence, so that's good.
16.
Well, 16 altogether.
Yeah, it's going well. But if you were in our facility in, let's say, April, and you've got 200 kids, or on one occasion we had 300 kids in a space in the old Penny's building trying to do science, that's a stretch.
Well, I was in there, and there weren't 300 kids at the time, but it's a pretty neat place, and there's a real lot of hands-on experience for them, too.
Yes,
which is. But she said she said 12 years was the last time that she asked for the money.
And
so she's been asking for the money for, for 12
right.
years, so that's the persistence I was referring to. But okay, Roger, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I think what I'd like to add to this is we cover in our principal service area already 23 counties. That's what you see in the light green. There are actually 110 school districts in that area, so we've still got more work to do with others. The population of that area is about 700,000. That doesn't mean, however, that that's the only area that we have visitation from. We are a major tourist center, as you're well aware. And we get people, if I look at our sign-up books, and I have, we get people from Twin Cities and below on a regular basis. They come up there looking for a good time, good fishing, lots of experiences with the Mississippi River and the Itasca Park. But that's a very minimal number when we start talking about 700,000 people being served by the center. The most important element of that is the early childhood, and particularly as we begin to see ourselves as an international race, in an international race for scientific development. And I saw a poll just recently of nations where we were ranked as a nation 21st out of 30, which is a sad situation. As a former college professor, I can remember the transition when it started. And we begin to see more students from in chemistry programs and IT programs from foreign nations than we saw from our own population of this country, and particularly from our state. And it was discouraging to me. One of the points that I want to emphasize is that we used the money from 10 years ago very well in positioning what type of structure, how it could be divided into various sectors, and how it would fit into the changing development of the city of Bemidji. And this document is one of the products of that, and I have that available to individuals to look at. And we got to the point of being able to identify spaces. We now need to look at those even more so, because this structure was about 52,000 square feet. And the demands that are coming to us for not just science exhibits, of which there are over 200 in the facility today, but also from schools who want to bring their classes in, and from individuals and groups that want to use our space as a learning environment, is just growing significantly every day. And the current space of 27,000 square feet, roughly, among other things, isn't even accessible to handicap on the second level. It's an old building, and it needs to be brought up to speed for the needs of American children today. Secondly, our target date for construction is about 2012, and we will, I'm sure, be back looking for help then, but we also need this money to help bring the attention of the foundations, which are very stretched. We're supported by over 20 right now. But as we start looking for building funds from them, and we do have some very positive indications from over 20 other groups, that we will use the publicity of this happening to jumpstart some of our work with those. Recently we had, and I am not able at this time to tell you who, but we've approached a major company within the facility within the Bemidji area, and they've agreed to give us a loaned executive for 6 months to help work with us to move forward in developing this project in, as a core economic development site within the Bemidji, in the city of Bemidji area. I guess I would add, you need to ask us who our clients are, because our clients are mostly young people who have not been exposed to science. I was lucky enough as a child to be exposed to science, and I know what it did for my life, and I think others can testify to the same thing. And we need to move forward. We need to show progress, and that progress, the next natural planning step, is to go from concept design to specific design on the facility itself, allocate our spaces, and move forward to be construction ready by 2012. And I thank you very much. If you have any questions, we'd like to answer them for you.
I appreciate that. That this, now, did you say it would be located over by the new hockey rink?
Actually, it is located on the Mississippi River, between Lake Irving and Lake Bemidji.
Okay.
As it goes,
as it's going north.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, so it would be basically the first structure on the Mississippi, the first public structure on the Mississippi, I believe, from its inception.
It would be.
That's right.
And so that would be kind of a really neat thing to have for the state.
Are you going to have it over the river?
We're not being that elaborate, Mr. Chairman.
We've actually explored that. Had a little resistance from the DNR, who don't
understand.
That fish love shadows.
Exactly.
You know? Predator fish like shadows.
But, Mr. Chair, actually there's a strong emphasis by the committee on making sure that this is a very environmentally friendly structure, and that would be part of some of the newest innovations would be built into the structure. A couple of other comments I would make is that Bemidji State University, the soon-to-be retiring president, has always been very interested in expanding the college's research and development capabilities, And in partnering with the community, as it has in the past with the Event Center, there are some opportunities there for doing commercial research projects as well as educational research projects that young kids from a pre-K age and onward can be exposed to. There's also opportunities to take the partnerships with the school to the next level, where now there are strong, you know, there's strong extracurricular programs there. I'm sure that there, with added technology, that the hands-on, that there could be internet online opportunities for actual curriculum in the school, coursework in the school with hands-on opportunities at the Science Center, again, if we can get the new building built, allowing all of the children in northern Minnesota to have the same opportunities as those in the metro, to be exposed to science, to see that it's fun, to see that it's interesting at an early age, because I think, you know, that connection at an early age and those opportunities going forward is what it's going to be necessary to make sure the kids in our area have the same numbers focusing on this type of area so that we're not going to be left behind in terms of future economic opportunities.
Okay. Any questions or comments from committee members?
May I say one thing?
Absolutely.
Actually, Headwaters Science Center is the only such center in a 300 or 400 mile wide belt, at least, between Winnipeg and the Twin Cities.
Oh, and Mr. Chair, that was the final comment I was going to make. When it comes to transportation issues, as many of us here know, our school districts are having to subsidize out of their general fund busing just to get kids back and forth to school. So the opportunities to transport kids down to the Science Center here and take that out of a transportation budget, I mean, those opportunities just aren't there anymore. So having something in our area has become even more important as gas prices have risen and as there's so much pressure on those transportation budgets.
This has been a pretty good hearing for exposing the needs of rural Minnesota, as opposed to everything being here in the Twin Cities. It's pretty neat. You weren't finished, though, were you?
Well, I was just going to say, along with Mary's comments, that we do a great deal of outreach. We go out to the schools a great deal, largely because they can't afford to bring their kids in. It's much better when the students can come to us for certain things.
Well,
we can bring a lot to them.
I hate to admit it, but I never heard of the Tell Moon before. On the map here. So that's a school group. And I don't know if that's in your district or in Saxhog's district. I think it's in Saxhog.
Saxhog's district,
So hopefully I don't get them in when we do the redistricting, because I'm now on record as being ignorant. But anyway, okay, any final comments? I think this is a really good project, and if we can get this seed money, it will send a pretty good message to the benefactors that you're talking to, so hopefully we can do something here. So then we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in a letter of recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee.
Mr. Chair, we have a joint hearing this afternoon with Senator Metzen's committee at 1, and then next Tuesday we will finish up our bonding hearings.
Okay.
26.
All right. Any questions for anybody?
You don't watch, because I got one at the same time in both buildings.
Yeah.
And they're both joint committees.
What?
House and Senate, and blah, 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 blah. Pardon me? Well, that's what I'm saying. Somebody always screws up, and they always have doubles. Different buildings and different floors
have?
And all that.
All right, on that note, meeting adjourned.
At the same time.
Who else is meeting?
Five guys. It's Environment and Natural Resources.
Yeah, we'll do that now.
Yeah, so I probably will go to that.
This doesn't stay here. I'm taking it with me now.
I've got two very intelligent people that will fill me in on all the pertinent details. You know what?
Thank you.
About you.
Yeah, both Beckerman and Anderson's committees are meeting this afternoon.
Oh, you already got
You know what happened?
Okay, thank you.
All of a sudden, everyone started saying we need to get
get all of our
costs. Yeah, that's exactly
you
know?
Right.
It's just, you know.
And it's like, oh, okay, so it's basically.
And the same thing's happening Friday.
A 2-week window.
I forget to say that.
To get all the money. Oh, sorry.
Well,
were you
going
to send these
like
to him?
To have them by tomorrow.
Back to the author.
I understand.
Yeah. Can I take one?
Third,
I do actually want to see one.
I'd like to help the traffic.
That be me. That be me.
It's been many years since I've been before a committee of that you're on.
The lip. Huh?
Yep. No.
Thank you. Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, we were there last week, you know, with the LCMR. No, yeah, it was the LCMR. Hearing all the people from the community.
Oh, the Hall Fan Line.
Building.
Yep. I heard you were in town. I'm not quite sure where I was.
It was a nice building. Beautiful building. Yes, it is. And the whole time
was everybody.
Hating down the sides. I mean, it was coming off. It must have been melting on the roof and just.
Oh yeah,
we had some
oh,
bills.
Okay, so we're leaving.
I got them stacked over there. The ones that were shipping.
How did we all see each other?
Probably one of these committee
hearings. Was it one of these committee hearings?
Yeah,
okay.
I was
just going to say, can you just
travel?
Well, I don't see how much anymore.
Well, if there's where they see him.
Yeah, but I wondered if anybody knew where I could find him.
So, I don't, but.
One would be the best.
I don't know who keeps track of him.
I'll have to try.
Why don't we honor so I'm not sure? It's not too much.
No.
Well, I want to say hello. Good to see you still here.
Yeah,
I started looking through
this. This is my 120
years. I know.
120 years.
But in the
museum thing as well?
Working for private companies. Everything else
that
was shot.
That was hot when I started up here.
We built a number of major ones. But I started going through the little green book.
There's been some turnover.
It's been so many years. Well, anyway, thank you very much. I may stop you if you want. Part of my job is they want me to. I'm a board member of the Science Center, which none of us are paid or anything like that. We're back in business. So thanks again.
Can you bring the cart here?
For a partner?
No.
That means I can go to two meetings at the same time in two different buildings and watch for everything in the building.